from Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, comes the nation's number one show for caregivers on 1510 WLAC, hosted by a caregiver bringing three decades of experience to the 65 million Americans who get up every day and put themselves between a loved one and disaster. I learned a few things over these many years of taking care of someone. Most of it I learned through failure, but hey, you know what? I never learned much from pleasure, but I learned a lot from pain. And here's what I've learned over the years, that a healthy caregiver makes a better caregiver. How do you help somebody who helps somebody? I'm drawing on my journey of taking care of somebody with 78 surgeries, both legs amputated, $9 million in medical bills, 60-plus doctors, 12 hospitals, 7 different insurance companies. That's the experience that I'm bringing to you as a caregiver. Now, this problem is only getting more difficult for folks as we've got this baby boomer population that's aging. And so many people are dealing with this. How do you help them? I'm Peter Rosenberger, and I'm glad you're here. If you're joining us across the nation on iHeart, we welcome you. It is a great day in Tennessee, a little toasty outside. The rhinestones are starting to melt a little bit, but it is a great day in Tennessee, and we're thrilled to have you here. If you want to be on the show, the number is 800-688-9522. We've got a special treat, and we're going to jump right to it. Candidate for mayor is coming on our show, and as David Fox, he'll be with us here in just a moment. But first, I have to introduce the other part of this show. You know him as the Sultan of Sound, the Baron of the Board, the Earl of Engineering, the Ayatollah of Audio. He plays great music, and that's why we call him the Count of Mighty Disco. John Butler, everyone.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate that. That's just a wonderful set of titles that you've bestowed upon me today. I get paid in titles.
You could cash them at any bank.
Absolutely. It's just like a money order.
You've got a special shout-out you want to do to someone.
I do. My lovely wife, Amber, is listening right now, and I just wanted to tell you that I love you, sweetie.
How about that?
There you go.
See,
that was a super easy one.
The Count of Mighty Disco, he can groove. And he's got heart.
Oh, yeah.
And he does it. But I'm very excited about our show today and our special guest.
Absolutely.
And David Fox was so very nice to be able to take some time out. He's busy campaign time. The election's almost here. I think early voting has started.
I've seen a sign or two.
Yes, we have seen a sign. And he's really coming on strong. But I reached out to him and asked him, said, would you like to come on and tell about your journey, your life? And he was so gracious to agree. So thank you. So let's get right to him right now. David, you with us?
Absolutely, Peter.
David, thank you, first off, for coming on the show and sharing your heart and your vision on some things. And I want just to give my listeners a chance to get to know you a little bit before we get into some of the topical issues of why we have you on the show today. But I got to ask you something. Sure. When you decided to run for mayor, now you've been no stranger to the public eye. You were chairman of the school board and so forth. But when you decided to run for mayor and you sat down across the dinner table with your family— How did that conversation go?
And that was the critical conversation. That was really the final piece to see if this would make sense. Because as much as I love Nashville and I'm eager to do, just like anybody else, do all I can to make the city prosperous and put it on a good path, you know, it wasn't worth wrecking my family over. And my wife, Carrington, is a restaurant critic here in town with the Nashville Scene. She covers restaurants, so she has a lot of work on her own plate. We have three little boys, Oscar, Julius, and Simon, who are 12, 10, and 9 years old, who have their own very busy schedules. And so so before we would commit ourselves to undertaking this, we just need to do a little soul searching and to see, could we pull this off without essentially destroying our family? Could we do this in a way that where I could be a good parent and an effective mayor? And so we had a serious conversation. We talked about I've always enjoyed coaching my little league my little kids' little league baseball teams. And I told him, I said, well, I've got about a year here when I'm running for office as a candidate that kind of all bets off. I probably won't be able to do that. I'll be sort of lucky just to get to some of the games. I said, but after that, if lucky it were elected mayor, then I should be able to get back to some sense of normal, normal lifestyle. And, and they were just so supportive, all of the kids, and most importantly, my wife, Carrington. It's, you always hear politicians will sort of make the comment, and they'll single out their spouse for how supportive they've been. Well, now I really appreciate it. Now I really understand it, because my life day-to-day is simple. I, you know, start campaigning like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm working on that to about 9 o'clock at night. So my life is simple. It's a lot of work, but my wife's work, you know, she's still doing her regular work. She's essentially doing the heavy lifting, raising our three boys, which I would like to be doing and will soon, again, be participating in. And she's doing a lot of the social media. So the pressure, kind of like, you know, your whole focus on caregivers, you know, this whole process of being a candidate, it's not the candidate where the pressure is. The pressure is on the spouse. And so I've got an awesome one in with Carrington. We've been married for 15 years, and I'm just blessed that she's my wife.
What a tribute that is to her and to your boys. And I've seen you guys out on the campaign trail. The family joins you, and the, yes, the boys seem to be incredibly enthusiastic about it. And for young kids like that, that's not normal, you know. I mean, that's, but you guys walk around as a family and you do these things, and they seem to be willing to lend a hand and do it. So it's, I was just kind of curious about that, because, you know, that's right, not the conversation you sit around the dinner table and have very often. Hey, gang, I'm running for mayor of Nashville. how are y'all? Pass the potatoes, you know. And exactly. but was there a tipping point? Was there a one defining moment that said, okay, we're in? Or was this just a gradual thing? Everybody kind of just gave their thumbs up, and then, okay, we made a decision? Or you know, what did that look like?
Well, and this was really the final piece of the puzzle. It, for me, you know, I have a lot of people who think about running for political office for decades. That's kind of their lifetime goal. It's not, hasn't been for me. I've been in business, and I love being in business. I'm running because I think Nashville has some challenges that I'm eager to address. And so this was a more sudden, you know, I just started thinking of running for mayor a couple of years ago, and it took me about 8 or 10 months to just to think through all the reasons to do it and the effect it would have on my career and the family. And so the final piece really was this conversation with our boys. You know, Carrington had been part of this conversation for a long time, and we had, and had a nice conversation with our present mayor, Carl Dean, about a year ago, and just, I said, I don't want to talk to you about policy. I'm not going to ask for your support, but I do want to know, can you be an effective, can you be a good father, a good parent, and be a successful candidate and successful mayor? And we had an excellent conversation. We talked for about almost an hour, and he just shared. He said, you know, the stresses of a campaign are, it's kind of a 24-hour job, and you're not, it's hard to be a good parent. And your spouse has to know that on the front end so they're not caught off guard. And he said, but if you're a good leader, a good manager, you should be able to control your calendar. He said, I've been able to get home when his children were a little bit younger. He said, I could get home at 5 o'clock or 5:15 to get at their school and be a good parent. So that was a very important conversation he had. It was very generous of him just to sit down with me. And we spoke about it with the boys, and they had some kind of apprehension about how much would I be gone. But, you know, like you said, Peter, we've involved our three sons as much as we think is appropriate in this. We want them to feel part of it. Like you said, not every child has an opportunity to have this experience. And for us, it's about public service. While the campaign is exciting and we're learning so much more about Nashville than we ever knew, you know, the only reason to run for mayor or any political office is to be of service. And we want them to always understand that's what this is all about. And so, you know, they got it. They knew I would not be as involved in their day-to-day activities. And it's been exciting. They've enjoyed it. They've been in a few of our commercials, and our friends kind of give them grief on that, of course.
well, they're you know, they're 9, 10, 11, 12. That's half the fun.
And I love how you describe them on your website, you know. And you know, you took being chairman of the school board was not exactly a walk in the park for you.
No.
And so you knew that that's a taste of kind of the things that are yet to come. And so this is not an easy decision to go into, and I'm sure it wasn't. But it sounds like you guys have done an extraordinary job as a family and supportive. And you know, I've been around a lot of politicians over the years, and you could see the ones that are kind of putting it on and so forth. And
right.
And I've just been really quite moved. I don't mean to step off the off the dais here, but I was just really quite moved about how your family just a regular family. You guys are just a family, and you just want to do something for Nashville. Well, listen, we're gonna take a quick break. Then we're gonna come back, and we're gonna get into the whole thing about caregivers and caregiving, and let you share your own story on why you're on this show today. And I'm just really grateful. We're talking with David Fox. He's running for mayor of Nashville. This is the Peter Rosenberger Show. If you want to be on it, the number is 800-688-9522. The Count of Mighty Disco will answer the phone. Won't you, John?
Absolutely. I'm very lonely. I like talking to people.
We'll patch you right through to David. So come on right back. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jeff Foxworthy. 65 million Americans serve as a caregiver for a sick or disabled loved one. If you're one of them, then listen to my friend Peter Rosenberger's show here on 1510 WLAC. He's got redneck tendencies, but he's really good at what he does.
Peter Rosenberger, he's not a preacher, but he's got great hair.
Welcome back to the show for caregivers about caregivers. Hosted by a caregiver, we are the nation's number one show for caregivers. I am Peter Rosenberger. Glad to have you with us. We are talking with a special guest today, David Fox, who's running for mayor of Nashville. And we are just thrilled to have him here. And so if you want to be on the show, if you want to talk to him, if you have some thoughts you want to be able to throw out there, the Count of Mighty Disco, who you just heard his offering there.
Absolutely.
Little grassroots.
Everybody needs a little grassroots, man.
There you go.
Sooner or later, love is going to get you. I guarantee it.
David, see, we're topical with our guests. Grassroots. See, you got the connections, right? Okay. We just want to make sure that you were tracking with us. The Count of Mighty Disco, he's good at what he does.
I like to think so.
But so if you want to be on the show, 800-688-9522. All right, listen, one of the things that we do on this show here is we recognize that every family has a story. Everybody has a story. Everybody's connected by this. If you love somebody, you're going to be a caregiver. If you live long enough, you're going to need one. It's just a part of the fabric of our life. And my passion, my goal, what I've done in my books and everything else, is just what can I do to help those folks who are doing it? And I'm drawing on 3 decades of this myself. And I thought, okay, what does it look like to help that 22-year-old version of myself that's out there that's taking something like this on, or these parents of special needs children or so forth, or somebody whose parents themselves are diminishing, whether mentally or physically? How do you help those caregivers? And so that's what we're doing. But part of it is we also just share our story. So, David, I just want to take a few moments. You don't have to get too personal with it, you know, but we'd love to hear your story. And your family's, how this has touched your family as well.
Well, sure, Peter, and I'm happy to. And as you said, I think pretty much everybody has a story. If you live long enough, you have somebody who needs someone to help them. And for me, my primary exposure and involvement was with my mother. She was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease when she was about 70, I guess, or at least in her late 60s, mid-60s. And she had Parkinson's disease for 17, 18 years. And as you might know, it's a steadily kind of worsening condition usually. And the medications help, but then the medications themselves have very troubling side effects. And for me, while I was engaged in her care, it was my father who really did the heavy lifting. My dad had his own health challenges. He had vascular disease, and my mother had been a trooper for years and years and years. He had had a heart attack when he was in his 50s and bypass surgery, and she was always there for him. She did everything to keep him strong and was just terrific, a great partner for him. And so when she became ill, my dad felt just a huge sense of loyalty, knowing how valuable, you know, my mother had been to him. And as her condition worsened, you know, he was not willing to, or just not comfortable having her like live in a long-term nursing facility when her care needs went up. And by this point, in his 80s, and his health was not great. And fortunately, he had some financial wherewithal where he could have some people come in and help, which was very important. But what I saw was it was more than just a physical toll on my father. It was a very, very distressing emotional toll. My dad was not one who shared his emotions too much. He was a hardworking, type A guy. But as my mom, got worse, further along into the disease, and as you might know, with Parkinson's disease, you can lose clarity of thought, and she would have, she could not really understand what was reality, and she would share some of these disturbing stories with my dad, and it would really, really upset him. Even though he knew that she was not thinking clearly, it was very, very upsetting to him. And a comment that I don't know if it's appropriate to make, but I'll say it since it's just the truth, is that after my mother died, after 17 or 18 years of Parkinson's, and she died of that disease, my dad, of course, was very sad and certainly in a funk for for a number of weeks. But what I noticed is that after several months, he rebounded, and he mourned, of course, the loss of my mother, but he came back so physically and emotionally stronger that I had failed to understand just how difficult, and really it's the emotional part more so than the physical part. I just had failed to understand how emotionally costly it had been for my father. And it wasn't until several months, 3 or 4 months after my mother had passed away, where I looked at him and said, "Man, you haven't looked this good in 6 or 8 years." And I think we both sort of understood why. And so, again, I say that comment kind of carefully.
This is the one show that you don't have to say that comment on carefully, the one show where we get that.
Okay.
And I have so many people that I engage with who are in that, and I don't think that people fully appreciate the weight that's on their shoulder on
right.
what your dad did. I want to go back. Let me put a pin right there, and I want to go step back a little bit because your dad had made some financial decisions.
Yeah.
And I think his background was in life insurance and financial planning, correct?
Correct.
Well, see, this is one of the things I push pretty hard on the show.
Yeah.
Because he did look down the road and see this, and so many caregivers are not in
right.
that kind of situation where they have really made the decision and they're taking care of somebody, but then they're going to doom the next generation to do the same thing they're doing because they're not making some plans for it.
That's right.
And I push this pretty hard, and you got a finance background, and you understand how important it is to secure those things for the future, and it's deeply troubling for me because we've got already 65 million plus. Actually, I think it's now 67 million caregivers, and the number they're saying, get this, David, $1 trillion plus will be transferred in wealth in taking care of the baby boomers.
Right.
I mean that's astonishing, and families can't. It's hard enough. Your dad had the provision to take care of your mother, but the weight of it on him still was excruciating. When
right.
you add financial weight to that, man, this is going to take family. This is going to bust them up. It's going to bust them down to their knees.
Certainly is, and you're right. My father made his living selling life insurance, and he thought he always thought long term. How do we avoid risk? How can we put ourselves in position so that we are in okay shape as we get older? And so he had all the insurances he needed when they got into their mid to late 60s, they moved into a kind of a senior living area that, before they really needed to, just was thinking ahead, saying, well, I don't know how long our health will be in great shape. So they moved in plenty of time. And so, they had positioned themselves perfectly, really, for becoming older and incurring some health problems. He had planned ahead and had the insurance he needed to really lessen the financial burden. And you're right, if you add that stress into it beyond just the physical toll and the emotional toll, I just can't imagine, frankly, how debilitating it is for caregivers. And actually, I've witnessed that too. And we all have. We've all witnessed friends and family who wind up in these situations where they have someone who really needs a lot of care and the financial wherewithal just really isn't available to provide what you would like. So, yeah, my dad's my dad followed his own advice. He planned ahead, and I think you guys would have seen eye to eye on all this stuff. He did what he was supposed to do and lessened all the negative impacts as much as anybody could have done. So, and the end result is both he and my mother, I think, kind of maximized the quality of their lives, even when he was the primary caregiver.
Well, it sounds like that you had a very good model for you, and we're gonna talk about that on our next segment here on how that model of your father has impacted you for business, for life, for your own family, and now for your vision for Nashville.
Sure.
And we're going to be right back and talk about it. But first, I want to tell you that this section is brought to you by Aging in Place Transition Services, 615-330-9918, 615-330-9918. Because you know what? Moving and from one place to another is not an easy thing to do when you have elderly parents or people with special needs. You need to call the folks at Aging in Place Transition Services, 615-330-9918, because they can help you do it. They do this every day. We'll do this once or twice in our lifetime. They do it every day. Call the pros at this. Listen, we're going to be right back. We're talking with David Fox, who's running for mayor of Nashville. If you want to be on the show, 800-688-9522, 800-688-9522. This is Peter Rosenberg. I am glad you're with us, and I'll see you in just a minute. Don't you go away. Stay right there. Keep looking at the radio. Keep looking at your app on iHeart.
Unless you're driving.
Unless you're driving, then don't look at the radio. We'll be right back. This is Peter Rosenberg.
I'm Gracie Rosenberger. 20 years ago, I walked for the first time on two artificial legs. From that day on, I've been committing myself to helping fellow amputees have the same opportunity. And for more than a decade, our organization, Standing with Hope, is working with the government of Ghana, West Africa, teaching and equipping their local workers to build quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. I wish you could see the faces of those who are walking for the first time, people who never dreamed they would ever walk again. And what's more, the message we're sharing with each patient and their families of what Christ has done on our behalf equips them to continue standing with hope. We have another team returning to West Africa this summer, and we're asking for your help to sponsor team members to help ship supplies and sponsor artificial limbs. Please take a moment and visit standingwithhope.com and get involved today. That's standingwithhope.com. Together, let's empower others to stand with hope for life.
I mean, when I hear that, I want to hear say all skate, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody out on the skate. On the rink. Welcome back to the show for caregivers by caregiver. Everything you need to know to help you as a caregiver. We are the nation's number one show for caregivers. I am Peter Rosenberger, bringing you 3 decades of experience as a caregiver to help you strengthen you. Man, we are so far out in front of this issue on and equipping caregivers to be healthy caregivers, because healthy caregivers make better caregivers. I mean, think about it. You know, how long can you hold your breath while you're helping someone? I call it Delta Doctrine. I was flying out of Delta one day out of Atlanta, you know, on everything leaves through Atlanta.
I was going to make the joke and you beat me to it. How dare you?
It's my show, John. It's my show. But, and they said, you know, put on, if we lose air pressure, put on these masks and then help a vulnerable loved one after that.
Well, why wouldn't I do the loved one first?
Well, think
first,
about
Peter.
It. Because every flight attendants union, every marketing team, every government official, every legal entity associated with the airline industry knows that it's counterintuitive. They have to remind us to put our mask on first, because we can't hold our breath long enough to help a vulnerable loved one. We are better equipped to help somebody who's vulnerable if we're healthy. And I'm going to ask you something. When's the last time you helped somebody when you were passed out? Okay, that's what the point of this show is about, is to equip you to stay healthy, and we talk about this. But we've got a very special guest on the show today, David Fox, who's running for mayor of Nashville, has joined us. You just heard in the last segment where he shared his own personal journey of how this has touched his family. And we want to transition that now and show how that has now impacted all the family things he's gone through. It's shaped him the way he deals with business and so forth. Now his vision for Nashville and how this can affect those of us who are caregivers and those of us who are yet to be caregivers as we look to these things that are coming down the pike. If you want to be on the show, the number is 800-688-WLAC, 800-688-WLAC. That's 9522 for those of you in McDuncan. 1-800-688-9522.
Don't make fun of McDuncan. I get calls, Peter.
You get
all
calls
right?
from McDuncan.
Well, the times that they can figure out how to use the phone.
But bless their hearts. Sarah, can you get me the Peter Rosenberger Show? Now, if you get that joke, do you even get that joke?
Sorry, bud. You remember how old I am.
That's the Andy Griffith Show. You remember that was – oh, for heaven's sakes. I bet David got that. All right, David, you still with us?
I got that. Oh, yeah, and I got your joke.
Oh, God bless you for it.
And oh, was she the switchboard operator?
Yes.
Okay.
Sarah, would you – okay.
Sorry, buddy.
For heaven's sakes.
Look, I'll get off your lawn when you stop shaking your cane, all right?
You kids, Lord, you give them ears, yet they do not hear. All right. We are with David Fox, who's running for mayor of Nashville. And I want to hit you up with kind of the lightning round, David, if that's okay.
All right.
65 million plus Americans serving as family caregivers. 47% are in the workforce. And the numbers are increasing as the baby boomers age. I mean, these are big numbers now. You're running to be CEO of Nashville's metro government, and you'd have quite a large population of employees who juggle work with family caregiving responsibilities, from school teachers to first responders. I mean, this is going to be a real challenge every day as we move forward. As these baby boomers get older, it's just going to be an increasing problem. What are your thoughts on this, specifically as you look for, like, flex schedules or using technology to allow more workers to telecommute? You know, teachers and safety, fire, rescue, so forth, those are limited options. But do you see some specific opportunities to avoid human resources challenges? And if so, what does that even look like for you?
Sure. And I think it is a top-down situation. You know, I've been in business for 30-some-odd years and, again, was involved in the school board and the large school system there. And it's clear that, you know, everyone sort of takes their signals from what happens at the top. And so I think it's just vital that we have a CEO of our city, a mayor of our city, who recognizes the challenge of so many of our citizens here in providing care to loved ones. And so when it comes to being in a large employer itself, metro government, you know, what I think is important to do is to make sure that the mayor communicates to all of the department heads, and there are like 53 departments in Nashville, about the flexibility that we need to have so that people can take care of loved ones and things like that. And there are a lot of things that metro government is doing, and many things that they can be doing. You know, first is just making sure that there's, you know, fostering very good communications, you know, from the metro government to employees, just letting them know of the various opportunities out there to get help. You know, we can pull together the networks of service providers. You talk about aging in place. A lot of other, you know, entities in town who also are there to help. Some are nonprofit, some are for-profit. You have organizations like 50 Forward and others who are there to assist. And so I think as mayor, we can encourage the head of these departments to provide those resources. But, you know, the bottom line is to make sure everybody is flexible. You know, as an employer, you know, I'm happy for someone, if they can get a lot of work done from home, and it's not on the, you know, 9-to-5 schedule, that's fine. It doesn't really matter. And I think what I've seen among caregivers is their schedules are not always their own. You know, you sometimes have needs, you know, where you have to leave, and you have to leave in the middle of the day. You know, it's in that regard, it's kind of similar to having, you know, a young child where you have to leave work. And so, you know, I want to encourage that sort of flexibility. And specifically, let's see how far we can go on just teleworking, you know, giving employees the opportunity to work from their homes when they need to. And finally, one thing we can do is that when we have employees who do have these needs to providing care, let's encourage their bosses to sit down with them and just work out a written change of their responsibilities and have that sort of adult conversation. Take it that seriously. And if you just write it down, go through how can we change your responsibilities, or maybe when they're done, in a way where we're mutually satisfied. And that's the type of sort of proactive and sensitive thinking that I think if we bring that to bear, we can be in a good employer, because, you know, we want to do right by our employees, but we also want to be seen as a good employer and do the humane thing. So those are the type of things that I would want to do as mayor.
Well, and that means a lot to hear that. I wrote an article for the Nashville Business Journal a while back, and I talked about these things from a caregiver standpoint of view of how you can be proactive with your boss in a work environment, how bosses can be a little bit more proactive, and how the caregiver themselves. Caregivers, you caregivers that are listening right now, you'll get this. We're a group of high-functioning multitaskers. In many respects, we're an employer's dream because we're able to get a lot of things done very quickly and very innovatively. And I'd like to see more people harness that. But in order to do that effectively in the workforce, you're going to have to be forthright with your employer. You're going to have to go to them. And you don't have to give a lot of personal details, but say, look, this is what I'm dealing with. But then you give a fair day's work, and people will work with you. But if you go in there with an entitlement mentality, that just creates ill will. So it's a two-way street here. The employers are looking to be compassionate. They recognize this. You just heard this from David Fox. If he's mayor of Nashville, this is where his headspace is. But we caregivers, we have a responsibility as well to go and make sure we sit down with them and just let them know this is what's going on. And I think people want to do the right thing, but we just have to have that good flow of information. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. All right, let's go to number two here. 72% of caregivers are not seeing their own doctor, and yet they're taking care of the most vulnerable among us. Well, this is unsustainable. Now, if you're looking at it from a metro government standpoint, you're going to have a lot of taxing, and I don't mean taxing as dollars. I mean just the weight of it on your first responders, you know, and so forth, your hospital system and so forth. What are your thoughts on this? And I see this as connected because I see this as being a budget issue. And yeah, it's not a real sexy budget issue. You know, preventive medicine is never really a very sexy thing to talk about. But I love what your dad said. You know, it's not the money you make; it's the money you save.
Right.
And so as that shaped a lot of your childhood years of understanding that concept. What are some thoughts? We've got this wonderful setup here of Metro Nashville's health department and so forth, and a lot of good infrastructure already in place. Mm-hmm. I see this as an opportunity for the mayor and any political leader to use that wonderful platform to bring these people together, bring these partners together. It doesn't necessarily have to cost any more budget-wise, but it would be a focus on it, recognize this is important. We've got to get these people in to show how important it is for their health. So discuss that for just a moment.
Sure, Peter. And I think that's exactly right. And it kind of ties back to our current mayor. You know, current mayor's motto, it's all connected. And the more I've had experience on the school board and the more I'm a candidate, the more true that becomes. It's just there's so many interconnections between these issues, say between the budget and the quality of caregiving, things that you don't necessarily think of. So that's kind of the starting point. But you know, also going back to your analogy a few minutes ago, talking about the oxygen mask on airplanes. I mean, that's so true. I mean, if a caregiver doesn't take care of him or herself, can't be an effective caregiver at all. So I definitely recognize that, and I think that's a terrific metaphor. And one thing that's interesting about this is that the current mayor, Mayor Dean, has done, I think, a really good job of beginning a conversation in Nashville about public health, you know, not just on caregivers, more broadly than that, about what's the appropriate role for our local government to help create our community or help our community evolve in a way where we can all be healthier people. So for him, you know, some of it is building greenways and bike paths and having runs and things like this. Well, what I would like to do is I'd like to take that and kind of bump it up to the next level. Now, I'd like to, you know, as mayor, see if we can pull together various health groups, many of whom are already doing this work, of creating metrics of Nashvillians' health. So what I see us doing is pulling together something that talks about, say, you know, what is the incidence of diabetes? How much of an obesity problem do we have? To things like, well, what percentage of people are using seat belts? How many of our car accidents are caused by people who are using the cell phone? And then we could also work in ones on supportive caregivers and other relevant things and create a dashboard of Nashville's health. And again, it doesn't have, like you said, it doesn't have to involve a lot of dollars and cents, but it, again, you look at what is the opportunity of being mayor. Well, one is using the bully pulpit and to...
Exactly. Yeah. I love that.
Is to bring together, you know, all this concern, and there's so much capacity now on all of these different areas, you know, the work you're doing on caregiving and others are doing and diabetes and heart health, you know, we can pull it all together, create a metric for Nashvillians' health, and give ourselves goals to say, well, in 5 years, this is where we want the diabetes rate to go from here to here, or this is the where we are in terms of the number of accidents involving people on cell phones. We need to bring it down to this level. See, it's not until you measure things, I think, that you really get much done. So I think all of these issues, including, you know, trying to see if we can provide enough services, preventative health services, to avoid the costly, you know, being in a hospital emergency room, you know, all these sort of fit together, and we can find metrics for them. And our city is chock full of people with this expertise who are dying to do this. Again, this isn't a huge budget item. This is a matter of using the bully pulpit, pulling people together, getting some metrics that Nashvillians will look at and will take ownership of, and working together as a group, albeit a 650,000 person group.
That's a heck of a support group. But listen, we want to continue this. I'm up against a break. We're talking with David Fox, but we got a couple more here on the lightning round we're doing with him. 1-800-688-9522 if you want to be on the show. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Peter Rosenberger.
Tell me something good.
Welcome back to the show, Four Caregivers. The Count of Mighty Disco is grooving today, man.
Well, it started with the grassroots joke, right? Yeah. And that made a lot of sense to me, but I pulled that up and I realized that the person in my head was Don Cornelius from Soul Train.
Don Cornelius.
I ran with that sort of idea for the rest of
little,
the day.
Rufus and Chaka Khan there.
Absolutely.
And thank you. Welcome back to the show, Four Caregivers, about caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. Everything you need to know as a caregiver, we're going to try to get you that from our sponsors who are handpicked just for you, for things that you just heard of the thing for a split second. I was talking to a friend of mine about them. That was a company started here in Nashville by Vanderbilt students. And why do you need OnStar when you can get split second? For any car, it's right there and it keep folks safe. And it's not just good for folks who are disabled or elderly or whatever. It's for your teenagers that are driving.
It really is.
You're not there, John, but you
I'm
will be.
I'm getting there, yeah.
You will be.
And, I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And Kerrigan is my oldest. She's my daughter, obviously. And I dread the day that I go, here's your license.
Well, that's a great way of having tech to give you a little bit more peace of mind.
Yeah.
If you want to, by the way, if you want split second, I got that for my dad.
Oh, right on. He's been on the show.
I got that for my dad. Split second. It's 615-915-9949 is their number. And it's a great company started here in Nashville to support some local businesses.
Yeah, I was going to say local business. I don't really follow football, but I like it when the Titans
win. Well, all
my
sponsors are local businesses.
Of course.
I mean, we want to try to
help to tie that in with our guest, Peter.
Yeah, I know you were. I know you were. I've seen your work, John. Speaking of our guest, David Fox, mayor.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
He's running for mayor of Nashville, and he's bringing a whole lot of common sense, business, and heart to this election. And we're grateful that he stopped by to talk with us, share his vision. And if you want to be on the show, 800-688-9522. And also, I'm going to have this show podcast a little bit later. And you can go out to Standing with Hope and see this. Standing with Hope is the parent organization, the presenting sponsor of this show. It's the prosthetic limb outreach and caregiver outreach that my wife and I started many years ago. In fact, I'm heading over to Africa next month to continue our work in putting limbs on amputees. This is what we've been doing for a very long time. We do this as part of our missions outreach for our evangelical Christian faith. But we put legs on folks. We teach folks how to build legs. If you put a leg on somebody, they're going to walk. You teach somebody how to make legs, hundreds are going to walk. You share the gospel with them. Well, guess what? They're standing with hope, and that's what we do. And thrilled
I like
to be able
your,
to do
your, the punny name, too, by the way, Standing with Hope.
Standing with Hope. Well,
nice.
And so, you know, because my wife's name is Grace, people thought, you know, they asked us, why didn't you do it Standing with Grace? And Gracie said, you know, I was really proud of her for this. She said, you know what? It's just not about me and my name. It's about the mission.
I wanted it to be
beyond me.
That's wonderful. I didn't actually, you know, we haven't discussed that in the years that we've known each other.
And I was really proud of that. So we're going, if you want to be a part of that, to help sponsor. Well, I'm taking a team of prostitutes. That's prostitutes, John.
Look, you can talk to the people in McDuncan about that, all right?
It's not prostitutes. They got hookers in Africa. We don't take more. We're taking prostitutes over there, and we're going to continue our work in training. I've got a young lady that just I heard about. She's in Kumasi, Ghana. She's going to be coming down. She's missing both legs above the knee. Now, this is a pretty big big thing to do. And so my team, when we get there, she's going to be there Monday morning, and we're going to work on her. And then we got the little girl who's going to do a hip disarticulation. These are really complicated procedures that they need our help with. And my team, these are very, very good prosthetists, and we're going to do that. So if you want to sponsor them.
You glossed over this, Peter, but these are young women in a third world country.
Who would have not much hope for much anything else.
It's a pretty grim outlook.
My wife is a double amputee. It's hard enough here in America. Doing it in Ghana, that's a brutal experience. We're going to fix that problem for her. And so she can get up and take care of her family and go to work and go to school, whatever she wants to do. You know, she's going to be able to live an active life to the best of what we can give her. And by the way, David, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I have a partnership here at one of the Metro prisons over there behind Sam's. Off of Harding Place, CCA Metro, in a partnership I do with Corrections Corporation of America. Inmates volunteer to on these used limbs that we collect from all over the country. They go to that prison, and inmates volunteer to disassemble so that we can recycle the parts, which is kind of cool. We're the only ones in the world doing this with an inmate program like that, and they volunteer. This is something they want to do, and I've had inmates come up to me when I've been over there with them in training, and they just have tears in their eyes saying, you know, I've never done anything positive with my hands or thought about people with disabilities till I started doing this program. And I thought, well, that's very cool. All right. In the last few minutes, and you've been very gracious to spend the time with today, I'm going to hit you up with the one thing that everyone wants to know. Now, this is a show for caregivers. This is a show for caregivers. I understand that. But we caregivers get in traffic a lot. We're driving a lot. So, David, when I'm driving through Nashville, do you know that Presbyterians are swearing and Baptists are having to tint their windows so people won't see them swearing? And
anybody else catch that? All right.
Okay. So it's mighty hard to be good Christians when you're flicking everybody the bird in traffic here, people. So we're going to have to work on this. So, David, I got to ask you this. You get hit with this all the time. What are your thoughts on that? Because when I'm taking Gracie to the doctor or whatever, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, it's enough to make you want to just swear sulfurously.
Well, Peter, you're right, and that really gets close to the core of why I'm running for mayor to begin with, because, you know, I think we know that Nashville is such a great, nice, civil place where everyone's nice and kind to each other and their neighbors.
Except in traffic.
And that's the point, is that, you know, we've seen other cities like this. We saw Atlanta 15, 18 years ago. Be a it city and a fun place with a lot of civility, and then they don't get out ahead of some of the infrastructure issues, especially transit, and that civility just erodes. And our calling card internationally is that we're just nice folks. When people visit Nashville, they'll talk about, sure, the country music and the healthcare business and all this other stuff, but they'll always say, usually say, you know, the people in Nashville are so nice. You know, people would say hello to us when Carrington, the boys, and I on the Greenway, they'll wave to us. So that's what's at risk here. And so, yes, you asked me about what can we do about transit. Well, I think there's a few issues. We have a lot of commuter traffic, as you know, coming in from the surrounding counties. And we're blessed to be part of a thriving region. I think we need to have great relationships with all the counties in this area. But we have to recognize that we're getting a large volume of people coming into Nashville who live elsewhere, coming in for work. And then our own population density within the city is increasing at a very good clip. So there are a few things we need to do. We've never had really a mass transit, public transit system to speak of. We've always had kind of a bus system, but it was not very robust. So I spent some time trying to see if on the commuter piece, if we could induce CSX, which has the freight lines that go between Davidson County and Williamson County and down to Rutherford County. They have freight lines in many places. We would love to have a commuter transit system to see if we could do some sort of partnership with them. They've made it clear we cannot use their freight lines, and I get it. There's some compelling business reasons. But we can talk about their right-of-way. You know, they have all that land that goes adjacent. Maybe we could get the private sector to build and own and operate a commuter rail or commuter bus system alongside the railroad tracks. And, you know, the benefit of that would be pretty huge. We wouldn't have to use eminent domain, which I don't really like as far as to have to get property, the debt would be in the private sector. We'd have the private sector managing it. So I want to pursue that to see if that's a possibility.
Well, we're up against the time here, the clock here, but the last 10 seconds or so, last word.
Well, I'm just delighted to be here. I think I'm so glad and appreciative that you're focused on caregivers. The great experience of being a candidate is learning all the beautiful things that go on to make our city such a wonderful place. And the work that you and Caregivers with Hope is doing for Nashville is a wonderful part of Nashville.
Well, it's the Nashville way. How about that?
It is the Nashville way.
Well, that's your tagline, and I think it's a great one. Listen, we're so glad you are here today. If you want to see this or hear this again, it'll be out at standingwithhope.com. This is Peter Rosenberger. I love being here with you. Thank you for joining us. David Fox, mayor candidate here. Whew. Glad. All the best to you.
For more information, visit standingwithhope.com.